I got my Commodore 64 Ultimate, and now you have to hear all about it. Plus, Nintendo's lawyers are going after someone many consumers are happy about. Tonight is March 8th, 2026, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
That's right. It's going to be a great night. It's been a great week for me. Living in the past, not worrying. Well, everybody worries about what's going on anyway. Hello and welcome to a decidedly 80s 2026 edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes and here more often tonight, reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, leave comments in chat. I try to read the intelligent ones throughout the night. Just like Esther and Matt saying, Great Britain had a 13 colony lead and has zero SEC championships and also lost to the U.S. in the World Baseball Classic. And there's your sports reference for the night. Pod culture is already tuned out. And also, Tech Claw says, Hope everyone changed their clocks. Yes, here in the United States, where this show is based, we sprung forward to the time that we should be, that I personally believe we should be at all the time. We should be on what's called daylight savings time, where the sun rises later and the sets later. We move back to standard time for like 4 months out of the year. There's really no good reason why. Everybody's like, oh, it's for the farmers. And they're like, animals don't care when the time changes. They don't care. So we changed our clocks back to daylight savings. So in other parts of the world, this show is now either, I think, like 1 hour later than it was or 1 hour earlier than it was. I don't know. I am all for permanent daylight savings time here in the United States. And this is one of those topics. This is one of your topics, one of those topics where if we disagree, we can absolutely still be friends. There are other topics that, are something that governments control are responsible for where, there's a line in the sand. And like, if you believe certain extreme things, no, we probably can't be friends. If you believe standard time is the way to go, I can still absolutely be friends with you. You're wrong, but you're not so wrong that I won't love you as a friend. Tiger Hall says the reason was to save on energy, but it doesn't work since we still use a lot of it. Why change the clocks anymore? Why? And Dark Soccer says, unless you're Chasidic or Amish, your device does it automatically, or you have old devices. There are three devices in this house that we have to change manually. My alarm clock, which is literally from the 90s. And it still goes beep, 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 beep. It's what I use. I don't use phone alarms unless I'm traveling. Our oven, microwave combo, and my wife's coffee maker. Those are the three things we have to set manually. Everything else does it automatically. Yeah, and Pop Culture says my microwave and stove are the only things I have to swap. Yeah, and I've got mine's like a combo microwave stove, but then the coffee maker also, so it can go at time. But even now, my pet's food bowl adjust to daylight savings because we have a robotic thing that feeds them three times a day on a set schedule, which is great because it rations the food and they don't bug us for the food and they just go eat it when it comes out. Anyway, this is a podcast about time. This is an episode about time, but not that kind of time. But this is a podcast, so you can join us on our Discord server, Discord. It's vognetwork.com/discord is where you can get in. We are an all ages server, even though I know they're not really doing the age verification right now because they got in trouble over things over there at Discord. But I understand if you don't want to be on Discord because of some of the decisions that they've made, but you will not need to verify your age to be on our Discord server. That's the way we've got it set up. So we are at vognetwork.com/Discord. You can actually submit topics to talk about throughout the week. Thankfully, some of our amazing community members gave us some topics because I was not paying attention really to gaming news all week. And that's because we'll get to those topics later. They're actually later in the show roll. But that's because Commodore apparently listens to the show. Because last week I put up a little graphic saying, you know, my order, it was en route to my Commodore hub, ETA by February 26th, and the status date was on March 2nd. So they missed the date, right? And then I got an email like that Monday morning that OnTrack, which, by the way, is what LaserShip changed their name to, had my order, and they were delivering it that day. Commodore did not actually email me my tracking number until it left the final facility and was on the car waiting to me, even though it had shipped on like Thursday or Friday. So they had the tracking number on like Thursday or Friday, but they didn't send it to me until later. But anyway, my wife actually also had something coming from OnTrack. It was actually on the same vehicle, so we both got packaged at the same time. Mine was cooler. Hers was like clothes or something. I don't know. Important stuff too, but not as important as mine because I'm a guy and this is what I'm into. So it finally came. I got the Commodore 64 Ultimate, the Starlight Edition, which has LED lights in it. I did not get the basic beige. I've had enough beige Commodore 64s. It is roughly the same size as the Commodore 64. I have not pulled out my, I've got like six Commodore 64s that all don't work, but I think believe it kind of feels like the same weight and everything. It's basically, it's got all the same stuff as a Commodore 64, regular one. It has 2 9-pin joystick ports. So all your old joysticks will work. It's got a different power supply because the original Commodore 64 power supplies suck and you should never use one on your Commodore 64s. They have a tendency to, explode. And so you want to get a new one that's been made recently. People are making power supplies that work with the original Commodore 64s, and you should use those and not the ones you had in the 80s. But on the back is where we get a little bit different here. Instead of the user port on the back, there are two USB ports, an Ethernet network adapter, and an HDMI cable. But there is still the tape. This is the cassette adapter. There is still your video S-video adapter or serial adapter for your hard drives or disk drives. Your video adapter and an audio out jack. And then it does have a cartridge port. And I actually have my original 80s version of Fastload in it. And what chip do I have in here? Is it a Dorito? No, Weird Al. It is FPGA. I do love that song. All About the Benjamin. It's great. Video is great, too. It's like shot for shot for the original. It's great. I'm going to see Weird Al later this summer. So trust me. I get the joke, and I appreciate it. So, but this is an FPGA reproduction of the Commodore 64 using the Ultimate board. If I opened it, you would be able to see it, but I am not opening it yet. But it is does take, like, you know, regular Phillips head screwdriver. Like, they made it very easy to get into. On the back, you can even see the signatures of the people that designed the board. They're all in there. And you can you can put a micro SD card inside and things like that. But they really did keep the kind of the experience of the original Commodore 64, even the unboxing of it. Because it actually comes with some things that came with the original Commodore 64, just updated for today. And one of those, they actually gave a spiral-bound user's guide. It's spiral-bound, and it has a whole bunch of stuff. It even has basic programs. And if you're wondering, the original Commodore 64 also came with the spiral bound user's guide, and you can see that they look pretty similar. And even kind of on the inside, it's got some of the same text in it, and like the same chapter markers and everything. So like they really kept the spirit alive. So it's really cool that they provided a lot of that stuff, and I am now realizing I cannot find the other thing I was going to show. I don't know where it fell to. I will find it at some point, I'm sure. But it also comes with a cassette tape called The Very, Very Second. And I think it's called The Very Second. Or it's just called The Very Second. And I think, now this is the thing I don't have, because that's Jerry Matt says, also cool that Bobby still has his. I still have my user guide, yes. And I have like a whole bunch of books, because when I cleaned out my parents' house, I took all the Commodore 64 books, and they're all on a shelf over here in my office, like books about machine language programming and programmer's guides and all that stuff. But I believe that the original Commodore 64 came with a tape called The Very First. And it was a cassette tape, and it had some of the very first programs you could load, because this was back before the disk drives. So what they gave you is they give you a cassette tape. Is it really a cassette tape? No, it's not. But so it's actually a cassette tape. But the gimmick here is it is actually a USB stick. So this USB stick contains all of the programs that ship with the Commodore 64 Ultimate. And so you'll actually see it when I put in my put on the videos, because I've got a whole bunch of videos here that I am going to. You will see this in there, and it's lighting up and everything. It's really cool. And the in terms of SJRNMAT says Atari had the same thing, cassette tape for you to load and save programs. And I believe the Commodore one actually had like a program on it, so it was like the first program you loaded was that. Even the box, the box reminds you of the original Commodore, and it even says, welcome back to the world of friendly computing on the inside of the box. And the reason it says that is because the original Commodore 64 box in the 80s said, welcome to the world of friendly computing. And so even the box that it came in looks and is packed the same way as the original 80s Commodore 64 was. That's amazing attention to detail. That is love for the company. That the new Commodore has. And it's a YouTuber, I forget his name, but it's a YouTuber who really loved Commodore that bought all the assets of Commodore. And the patents and the assets, the logo, all that stuff from Commodore. And he relaunched Commodore International. And that is who is making these. And he's working with a whole lot of local people, or not local people, but a whole lot of homebrewers for various things and branding them as official Commodore and stuff. So like the C64, which I've talked about recently, the C64 Mini and what we call the Maxi, which is the full-size one, has the full blessing of Commodore. They're actually working with Retro Games, who made those, to do more things with the Commodore brand. So there's shipping logistics issues, but also shipping logistics is really hard right now in 2026. Other than that, like it's sounds like Commodore's in really good hands, and hopefully they do some more stuff. But let me show you some stuff about the actual Commodore 64 Ultimate, because I actually did take my camera down, and there's my box. So I'm actually airing B-roll. I'm going to try to narrate it. But I actually have the Commodore 64 hooked up. And what I want to mention here is that my Commodore 64 is hooked up. And I'm going to let this run. But I want to explain something to you. As you see this, the starlight, the keyboard lights up. There's all LED lights inside of it. But I'm going to go back just a little bit. This, what people are seeing on the screen right now, what people are seeing is they're seeing the Commodore 64 Ultimate, which has clear plastic, so LED lights can go in it. That's why it's called the Starlight Edition. They do have the basic beige edition, which is the version that you have seen. And then there's a Founders Edition that is gold and has LED lights inside of it. But in this picture, you actually see a Commodore 64 1702 monitor. You see a Commodore 64 1541 disk drive next to it. They're on a shelf. They're sitting on top of a shelf kind of that sits above the Commodore 64. There is a red and black joystick. There is a whole bunch of disc boxes over on the left, to the left of it. All of the other stuff other than the Commodore 64 Ultimate itself, including the shelf that the monitor and disc drive are sitting on, are exactly the same ones I used as a child in the 80s. That was my monitor in the 80s. It is the monitor that went with me to college. It was my TV in my dorm room in the 90s. That was my disk drive, 1541 disk drive. That was my joystick. The fast load cartridge that you saw, that was literally my fast load cartridge from the 80s that I had always used. The disc boxes over on the left are actually my disc boxes, full of both mine and my father's discs. Everything else here is authentic to the 80s. The only thing that's different is what's plugged into them is a Commodore 64 Ultimate that can also have HDMI out. It reads from a USB stick, but it is running my fastload cartridge. That's not a ROM. That is literally my fastload cartridge that you can see in the back there. And that is why I wanted this, even though I've got a C64 Mini and a C64 Maxi, is because those are emulated. And they run on their own stuff. They don't run with the original hardware, where this actually does. And so I am actually loading something from the internal USB, but the speaker on the inside of the Commodore 64 Ultimate actually makes the sounds of the disk drive. That sound you're hearing is coming out of the Commodore 64. So I used Ghostbusters, the Activision David Crane title, and I actually have the Starlight keyboard reacting to the music, so it actually blinks based on the music what it's coming out of the speaker, but it's coming out of the speakers of my Commodore 64 monitor. I already had the hookups for it and everything, so this is the way that I'm going to experience the Commodore 64 now. Apocalypse says, pimp my C64. Yes. And actually, I do the next shot in this that you're going to hear and see. I actually zoom in on the keyboard and turn off the lights so you can actually see what it's doing with the music here, because it's a neat effect. Now, what I will say is that the keycaps are not, as you can see, they are not see-through. So if you're in a dark room, these do not illuminate your keycaps like maybe a modern keyboard does that have LED lights in it. But it still makes a neat effect. Now, what I am showing here, notice I am turning on my disk drive. I am actually going to the menus, disabling the internal drive 8. And I am getting my father's pirated copy of Summer Games 2 that he nibbled himself. That was his handwriting. I am listing the directory, and now I am hitting, and you can see now that it's my 1541 drive that's loading up. So that's the actual authentic drive from the 80s, still works. The old disc that we had when I was a kid still works. And it... Now, one of the things I noticed for the video folks... I did some post-processing, and unfortunately, I can't actually, shoot the video because I was trying to get all this, so the video's washed out. But trust me, and what I'm also showing here is to prove that this is my disc, I went in the world record screen of that disc. And you can see that I was the world record holder in fencing. I will tell you that I know that Chip and Jason were babysitters of mine. I believe Jay Murphy was one of my dad's coworkers or something, but literally this is my disc with my records that was saved to the disc. So this is not, if you download the D64 from CSDB or something else, you're going to get different world records in here. You're going to get whoever cracked the game, they're going to put their records in here. But this is actually the one that I had and the one I played on as a kid. So I wanted to also mention, now this is, I'm going to try to, it. This does work with the new stuff that you've heard of. So because it has it can emulate what's called an REU, a RAM expansion unit. It can take the memory of the C64 up to 16 megs, so you can run the recently released Sonic the Hedgehog port on the Commodore 64. Which I had on a D64. I'd run it on the C64 Mini. But I can now run it on my real TV, real monitor. Now, why it's flickering, I honestly don't know how this is coming through on Twitch. This is the one part of the video I don't know how it was going to come across. I had to put a lot of the stuff on the Commodore 64, because it was made in Europe, is set to PAL standards instead of NTSC. PAL is 50 hertz, and NTSC is 60. But a lot of the stuff that comes out of Europe requires the PAL 50 hertz. So what they did is there is a setting inside there is a setting in the Commodore 64 Ultimate for your video. And I'll do this for a second. And you can actually say, I am on NTSC 50. And the reason I have to do that is because my monitor cannot decode a PAL signal. It doesn't work. It can decode as NTSC signal, but they emulate the 50 hertz on NTSC, which gives you that flicker. It does give me a little bit of a headache on that TV. If you're on HDMI, you don't care. It doesn't matter. But on that monitor, I can tell it's at 50 frames a second instead of 60. But you need to do that for the timing to work, because that's how the Commodore 64 worked. ZenMonkey11 says, does it have the Spy vs. Spy game, my favorite? None of those games are included on this. What is included on the little tape that I showed was homebrew games and demos from the demo scene. Nothing commercial. You are on your own for that. However, the website you're going to look for is CSDB. Commodore System Database or something. I don't know what it is, but that is CSDB. And you search for something there, and they will list how, like, 30 different versions of the game cracked by all these different groups. And you pick one, you get the D64, and you can even put it on this USB stick and load it. So I have Spy vs. Spy on a floppy disk. I don't know if it loads, but yes, it could play it if you had the D64, which there are places to get those. Esther and Matt says, this makes me want to dig up my 8-inch discs. Well, they're 5 1/4 inch. 8-inch, I think, was something else. But anyway, see if I can get stuff off of them if they still aren't demagnetized. That is what I was very surprised about in this whole process, is that I had thought the majority of my discs would have been, like, disc rot, demagnetized, and surprisingly, only a handful have come back as not readable. So much so that I found on one of my discs one of the first BASIC programs I ever wrote. I do not actually believe this is the first one I ever wrote. This is the first one I put a date on. And on this screen that we are showing here, the line 1 REM says Bobby's disk program, January 16th, 1984. I was not yet 29. I was 6 1/2 years old. Now, I am pretty sure, because this was on a disk called Bobby's Disk 1, or Bob, my dad called me Bob and I hated it. I learned to hate it later, but he called me Bob. So it was Bob's Disk 1. I did find a games number 1 disc that also had programs that I wrote that I remember, and I believe those predate this. So this is why I really wanted this, the Commodore 64 Ultimate, is because I wanted to go through those old discs. And I found a lot of neat stuff. I found programs my dad wrote. I found programs my dad wrote me. There was a math training, a math program that he made me for, like, simple addition. Except he themed it to me and my cat, and he actually, like, had the name of my cat in there. And every time I wanted to pet my cat, and I was calling my cat over, but my cat, whose name was Terrence, he would only come over if I answered questions right. And so as you answer math questions, Terrence shows up as a sprite on the left, and he creeps farther to the right of the screen every time I get a question right. And at the end, the sprite of me pets the cat, and my dad wrote it for me. Like, that was something that he wrote. And so I found stuff like that. I found his old Yahtzee program, because he was a big fan of the game Yahtzee. That was like the family board game, basically, even though it's more of a dice game. And he wrote a version of Yahtzee on the Commodore 64, and I actually did remember it as a kid, but I found it. And it was, his name's on it and everything, which is why I'm not airing it, because it has my real last name on it, and things like that. And I found things that my mom did, because she did desktop publishing. She typed paper. She did the newsletter for the neighborhood and stuff. And she did that on a Commodore 64. And we had a laser printer hooked up to the Commodore 64 because we were fancy. And I found all that stuff. So that's really why I really wanted to, and that's why I spent most of my time going through, not really playing games, but just going through all these discs, all my dad's BBS discs of things he downloaded from BBSs. And some of them I shouldn't have known about, or I definitely didn't know about at the time, because you should have been at least 18. That's the type of person my dad was. But we're going to move on. But yeah, my dad was everything. I love my childhood. So moving back over to the video here, we're going to keep going here. The other thing that one of the other modern games that I loaded, because this also uses some of the extra hardware of here. This is somebody had remade Super Mario Brothers on the Commodore 64, and you can actually have two SID chips. SID is the music chip, and so a SID chip can have three voices, but you can have two of them, and you get six voices. And the Super Mario Brothers game uses both of them. And so I can play Super Mario Brothers on my Commodore 64 Ultimate with all of the sound. It is very hard to play. You only have one button. So up on the joystick jumps, and you hold down the button to run. And that is how you play this game, because there aren't that many. There's a way you can hack in a second button where, like, it presses space, and that's what a lot of games did, was space was the second button, so you'd hold your joystick and you'd hit space if you needed a second button. But I'm able to do this, and because of the RAM expansion unit, and there's a turbo function in here, you can actually play a lot of things that wouldn't run on a stock Commodore 64. And then, obviously, one other game that I did play on here that I just had to load, just to see if it worked. I bought it on Steam, it does emulate how long it takes. Like, it does not speed up any of the loading of any of these games. So this is the actual length that it would take. I mean, I have a fast load cartridge, so it would be even slower if I didn't have that cartridge, but it doesn't speed up anything like Vice does. But I did have to load up. I bought it on Steam. Somebody called YYR, member of the community, because I did play some Pixel Poop 64, which is the Commodore 64 version of Pixel Poops that he released on Steam. He also, there's an NES version of Pixel Poops done by Loki. And so I was able to play this. He made it in Game Maker. But it loads just fine. This D64 that he distributes via Steam works just fine on the Commodore 64 Ultimate. And, there's a lot of poop on the screen. I know you probably can't see it. I don't know how well it's coming on. I've tried to, like, make the video, a little bit better. So this next stuff, I actually zoomed into the screen, so it actually comes up a little bit better. But, this is actually what the inside interface looks like, on the Commodore 64 Ultimate. But it has a Wi-Fi connection in it as well. So it's connected to my Wi-Fi. And so what I am actually loading up here is it comes with two terminal programs, and I'm using CCGMS for this. And I did cut out the loading. It takes way longer to load because you can't use fast load with it because the cartridge port interferes with the modem. But this allows you to connect to BBSs over Telnet. So I'm connected, and I go to this one called Retro Campus, bbs.retrocampus.com, port 23. And you can connect, and this is now like going on to a BBS. And this BBS even is connected to the internet, because most BBSs for Commodore are actually running on like Linux servers or something like that. But on this, you can actually get, it's got news feeds. It's based in Italy, which is why there's Italian. Or you could search Wikipedia. And so it's got it's basically middleware. And so you can search Wikipedia from your Commodore 64. So I searched for myself because I'm vain like that. I used to have an article on Wikipedia for about 9 months, and then I was deemed not notable. So they took it down. But I actually am mentioned in a couple of Wikipedia articles. Of the four articles here, two of them are actually me, because I interviewed the creator. I interviewed these people. So there's Beggar Prince and Mark Mencher Mark Mencher, he's like a video game recruiter. And I interviewed him on the podcast, and it got referenced in the Wikipedia article. And Beggar Prince is a Sega, it was a Genesis game that was basically translated and localized for the U.S. in 2006. So, we'll get into that in a second. So, they actually referenced the interview that I did with the person who headed up the localization of it back in, like, 2007 on Wikipedia. So that's how I'm in Wikipedia. So, yes, I am, Pop Culture's like, I'm a footnote in an article. I'm a footnote in several articles. But, yeah, so now one of the things I did say, that's all, like, running real equipment and everything. And, you know, a lot of people have, you know, asked, like, you know, but what else? And I did one other thing because I knew everybody's going to want to see it. And what if you don't want to use original hardware? What if you just want to have it on a really huge screen? And that's what I did. So I took it down into my theater and hooked it up to the HDMI port. And I loaded up a game. I loaded up Ghostbusters again. And so I could play my Commodore 64 games on a huge screen. It does give you the option to have scan lines or not. The scan line actually looked pretty good. It didn't look distracting. Some scan line emulation isn't that great, but this one is pretty good. And, you know, the keyboard pops when it's in Starlight Edition. So you can actually, like, you don't need any of the hardware to be able to use this stuff, the Commodore 64 Ultimate. It'll work with your existing monitor. The only thing it won't work with, you will need to get some kind of joystick that is a 9-pin joystick. They do not support USB joysticks right now, so you can't, like, hook up, like, a USB one yet. Apparently that may be coming, but right now you do need a 9-pin, and you need to use something that's more like an Atari joystick. Even though, like, the Sega Genesis have 9-pin connectors, you will you risk blowing out the cartridge, or you blowing out the computer. There's something with the voltage in, like, the Genesis joysticks that put it at danger. So it'll work, but then you may actually, like, damage something. So it's really best. You can get, like, an Atari 2600 joystick if you've got one of those. The 9-pin will work just fine in it. Commodore is selling joysticks. You can get a new joystick. They're selling more things. Like, they also sell shirts and mugs and stuff. Pop Culture asked, how many bottle caps did that set you back? And then he said, never mind, just saw. I think the basic beige is at $300 for the basic beige. The one I got, I believe, is $350, I believe is what it is. I'd have to look because I bought them before they jumped in price. But also they had there was, like, you know, you have to pay for sales tax and then shipping because it's not free shipping. They added a tariff tax, which who knows what that is now. Okay. So I was wrong. Yeah. So yeah. Poker's like $399 is what I see now. So, forget what I just said. The Starlight Edition that I got is $400. The Founders Edition, which is they're almost out of stock of these, which is gold, is $549.99, so $550, and the basic beige is $350. So I think they were $50 cheaper when I got them. That was until December 31st, which is why I ordered it in December. So if all you want to do is play games. And that's it. You don't necessarily need anything else. I can't recommend this to you. I would recommend for you either getting if you have a Mistier or something, get the Commodore 64 FPGA core and play the games that way. Or if you actually want something, get a C64 Mini. You're not going to be able to get a C64 Maxi. I think they stopped making the main size, but you can get a C64 Mini. It'll play Spy versus Spy just fine. It'll play all these games just fine. You can hook up a USB joystick to it. You're going to have a lot of fun with it. That's what I would recommend. But if you have authentic hardware, you have other stuff that you maybe didn't get rid of, stuff from your childhood, or you want to get back into that stuff. You know, you can buy, 1541 drives. People are selling theirs. You can get, you know, things like that. And maybe you have your old discs, but not anything else. Then maybe you would think about this. The price was worth it to me. And also remember, I also paid, I think, $50 extra because they actually, on the receipt, they actually put tariff tax, which is something we'll talk about in a second. So, and S. Sherry Matt says, I think the price you paid to experience stuff from your childhood that works on it great is totally worth it. And I agree. You know, like, this is probably going to be the best thing I buy all year, is this machine. I have had so much fun with it. And then the one last thing that I did that I'm looking forward to, one thing I've gotten working on it and one thing I haven't, there is I've talked in the past about how I got grounded in 1990 because I was on an online service that had plus charges, which meant they charged per minute. And I racked up a $450 bill. I actually found the bill. My dad kept it after grounding me and canceling the service. And it was called Q-Link or Quantum Link. Later changed their name to America Online or AOL. So this is where they started. But I was in a thing called basically a graphical mush, which is a multi-user shared hallucination is the name. But it's like an MMO. It was a graphical chat room. It was called Club Caribe, and it was by Lucasfilm Games. But it was originally called Habitat. And there is a revival called Neo Habitat done by The Maid, which is a museum in San Francisco. And they actually even worked with Randall Farmer and Chip Morningstar, who created it. They have emulated the server because they lost the server code. But they've emulated the server and they brought back Neo Habitat. And so you can run it. They basically give you a Vice, which is the Vice installer, which is the emulator that we have on PCs. And you can actually get into it on that. And they have instructions on getting it to work with a real C64, but not with the Wi-Fi modem that's in the Commodore 64 Ultimate. However, Quantum Link Reloaded, which is a wrapper around the original Q-Link service, which had news articles, download things, but also had a chat room called People Connection, that actually has been patched to work with the Wi-Fi modem in the Ultimate. And so, yes, I did on Wednesday night. They have a Wednesday night hangout in Quantum Link Reloaded, and there were actually two other people in the chat room. And so I absolutely sat in a chat room with 80s music playing on the speakers because, like, there's no sound on this. But I totally sat in there and chatted with some people elsewhere in the U.S. that were just sitting there on Quantum Link Reloaded in People Connection, just like it was the 80s. So hopefully I will get Neo Habitat working again because I really want to experience that. Unfortunately, they haven't answered my Discord request yet. There's actually an application process to get into their Discord where they're like, if you have any questions, join our Discord. So I'm like, great. And that was 6 days ago, and they haven't gotten back to me. So I left a GitHub issue on the official GitHub for Neo Habitat and said, yeah, I can't get into your Discord server, so I don't know how to ask this, but like, any tips on getting it with the Commodore 64 Ultimate's modem? Because it works with other Wi-Fi modems, but not this one. So there's got to be a way for it to work. Anyway, let's talk about the news real quick, because I know some people want to hear about what's going on now. Even PopCulture said the RAM crisis hit the C64. I don't think the RAM crisis really has hit it, because there's not that type of RAM is not what they're using here. But it's more shipping and logistics is what really hit them. It was because these are all built in China, and having to get them by boat to various places and then, you know, pay the import tax for whatever country it's going into. That has been crippling them a little bit. But talking about something the RAM crisis is hitting, The Verge reports that a blog post from Valve on Friday initially seemed to throw cold water on the idea that the Steam Machine, Steam Frame, and Steam Controller would arrive in 2026 at all. But Valve tells The Verge that it did not mean to suggest that, and that all three pieces of hardware will be indeed shipped this year, despite challenges from the ongoing memory shortage. And the reason this was recommended on the Discord server was posted when The Verge actually said Valve does not expect to ship in 2026. And apparently, that was wrong, and The Verge corrected it. Valve wrote that we hope to ship in 2026, which sounded like a downgrade from Valve's earlier promises, which was supposed to actually be by the end of this month. We were actually supposed to see all these things by the end of first quarter, which is March 31st. As recently as last month, the company explicitly said it had not changed its plan to ship all three new hardware products in the first half of the year, even though that itself was a change from its original goal of early 2026, or Q1 2026. So it seemed like that the company was quietly delaying the product yet again, and Valve did not immediately respond to a request for comment, so they went with the story anyway. But after it was published, Valve PR representative Casey Atkinson Boyle told The Verge that, quote, nothing has actually changed on our end, unquote. Valve also updated the blog post to state that, quote, we will be shipping all three products this year, unquote. RAM is also affecting the Steam Deck OLED. It's been mostly out of stock since mid-February, so you can't get a Steam Deck right now. It's thanks to the AI infrastructure rollout is the actual like term that will not get people upset at you. The AI infrastructure rollout is the what is taking up all of our memory and all of our storage, both SSD, solid state, and HDD, the platter hard drives. Both of those, all three of those things are essentially in extremely short supply because of the AI infrastructure rollout. And OG Happy Dude, who says, I hope the Steam computer will be going through a lot of QA hands before they go out. I've seen more and more social media and YouTube channels reporting that more and more are going downhill as far as working consistently over the past year, specifically talking about the launch model Steam Decks being the ones going downhill. Now, I will say that if they're working fine, and this is just normal. This is just normal human behavior. If something's working fine, the person who owns it will not talk about it. So you could be like, well, every time I see a video about a Steam Deck failing or about a Steam Deck, it's about it failing. Yes, because the vast majority of people who make Steam Decks are too busy enjoying their Steam Deck than to make videos about how they're enjoying their Steam Deck. And that's why, like, when you look at online reviews of a business, people generally only leave reviews if they're upset about something. That's why you will see a whole bunch of negative reviews about something, even though you'll be like, then how are they so popular if everybody hates them? No, it's just the people who don't like them are the ones that talk about it. The people that like them just go and enjoy it. Esher Matt says, I really do want the controller. I want to see what the headset can do, but I feel like the price is going to be key there. Yes, and I think the price is going to be more than what Valve wanted. And then the last story that I wanted to talk about, which I wanted to get into, is because this is something we can actually all get behind. It's about Nintendo. And Aftermath reports that Nintendo of America is suing the United States government over the sweeping tariffs that President Donald Trump put in place last year, according to a complaint filed Friday in the U.S. Court of International Trade and obtained by Aftermath. Though the Supreme Court has stymied the tariffs for the time being, the situation remains in flux for companies manufacturing goods outside the U.S. and sent stateside. Because once again, we don't have the manufacturing capacity in 2026 to make up for what we are losing by not being able to bring stuff in from other countries that do have the infrastructure. The Supreme Court struck down the tariffs on February 20th, but Trump vowed to impose new 15% tariffs on many global imports under Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974. Two dozen states are suing over the new tariffs as of Thursday. More than 1,000 companies have also sued the U.S. government for what they say is the illegal implementation of these tariffs. Those companies include Costco and FedEx. Nintendo of America's lawsuit is largely targeting refunds of the previously imposed tariffs that the Supreme Court struck down. The Supreme Court found that Trump could not invoke the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977 to put the tariffs in place. Nintendo of America's lawyers list the U.S. Department of the Treasury and the Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, U.S. Department of Homeland Security and former Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, Office of the United States Trade Representative and U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer, U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Protection Commissioner Rodney Scott, and the U.S. Department of Commerce and Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick. Lawyers wrote, quote, this action concerns defendants' initiation and administration of unlawful trade measures that have to date resulted in the collection of more than $200 billion in tariffs on imports on nearly all countries, unquote. Nintendo, this is the timeline of events. Nintendo's lawyers recount the tariff situation beginning on February 1st, when Trump issued the executive orders imposing new tariffs. The months that followed, the situation changed rapidly. They reached over 125% on goods from China. Then they were reduced to 34% in May. And, you know, he continued to impose the tariffs even when there was legal action going on. And they say they're entitled to a refund of the tariffs paid during that time through since 2025. So, lawyers wrote, quote, all tariffs collected under the IEEPA duties must be refunded with interest, and that the government has conceded this point in other court documents, unquote. So, does this mean you're getting a refund? No. You, the consumer, who bought a Switch 2, you will not see a refund. So, I'm sorry, you do not have any legal recourse with Nintendo, unfortunately. But what will be able to happen is that Nintendo will get refunded, because it is really the refund is for the person who imported the product into the US. So you didn't import the Switch 2. You were not the person of import for the Switch 2. Nintendo of America was. So you are not entitled, and I don't want you to be entitled to any refund. Now, if you were the person who literally imported it and had to pay the import tax, like if you bought something maybe from PlayAsia and you had to pay the import tax to be the tariff to get it in your hands, then yes, you actually are entitled to a refund. But you didn't buy the Switch 2 from PlayAsia. You bought it from Walmart or Best Buy or Amazon. Nintendo is the one who brought it in from Vietnam or China, wherever they were manufacturing them. And so they are entitled to the refund. You are not going to get a refund. And Dark Soccer says, but didn't PlayAsia technically import it? Okay, so maybe PlayAsia is the wrong thing. If you literally paid somebody from outside, so maybe PlayAsia is in the US, and I'm just, you know, I was assuming that they were from Hong Kong or something. If you, like from Etsy or something, you bought something on Etsy and you had it imported and you had to pay the tariff, yes, you are actually, because that tariff, you paid the US government, that tariff, you are entitled to a refund. You are not entitled to a refund of a Switch 2 that you bought on Amazon. Now, what Nintendo could do is, you know, now that they're going to have, if they get this refund, that allows them to make sales and drop the price of the Switch 2, which would make early adopters unhappy, because they're like, I paid full price, where's my refund? But it could help spur sales and get more Switch 2s out there. Because remember, consoles are supposed to decrease in price over time, not increase. Mike Def says, as far as I know, you have to pay import fees if you buy something from PlayAsia, because that's what happened to him. But that was many years ago. I remember when I ordered something from PlayAsia, it came from Hong Kong. It didn't come from an address in the U.S. But that was also many years ago. Immortal King asks, and if Nintendo's smart, they could rebate you. Unfortunately, they would have to rebate, because you didn't, unless you bought from Nintendo, like, because I didn't buy it from Nintendo, you would have to, like, it would actually be like the retailer and stuff. Like, it's very complicated. So Nintendo's not going to do it. Like, I'm going to just tell you that right now. You are not going to get a refund on any electronics that you bought from a U.S. seller from the tariffs. I'm sorry. Like, you're not. And that can piss you off all you want, and that's great. Put that energy into voting so it doesn't happen again. But you are not entitled to a refund from the U.S. government for something that you bought from your local Best Buy or your local Walmart, just because the company that sent it to Walmart to sell to you had to pay import fees on it. We are going to take a quick music break, because this is not actually one from, this is not a music break that is from Overclock Remix, even though we love Overclock Remix. I wanted to kind of show this off. So this is, and I'm even going to actually play it on the podcast, because I don't think it's going to get us muted. It's going to be, it's not direct audio too. So it's actually coming from my theater setup. So I have a home theater in the basement, and I have SID files, which is the music files. And one of the things that I used, a program I used, was called Stereo Player. And Stereo Player allowed you to play music files, and even showed like a big keyboard, a big MIDI keyboard. And, you know, it showed the notes and the colors of the notes so you could see things. And it was great. It was three voices and it was great. And that's what I lived with. And then now that I've got the C64 Ultimate, it's got a I can emulate a second SID chip in it. And that gets you six voices and stereo. And so you're not going to be able to hear the stereo really well on this because you're not in the room. But one of the music files was the old 80s Beverly Hills Cop theme. Remember Axel F? And it's six voices playing on a Commodore 64 in a huge theater. So that's what we're going to listen to here as I rest my voice right before we talk to Orange Lounge Radio. You are participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Chocobo all day. Can't get it out of my head.
Hey, this is Robbie Damon, the voice of all your favorite anime and video games, and you are participating with the Bobby Black Wolf Show. Have fun, baby.
This sounds like you're having fun.
Everybody was having fun. With Herbie Hancock and Axel F and everything going on there, I said stop that too soon. That was two SIDs. I don't know how it was created. Like, there's apparently some tempo fluctuations in it, but you know, that might have been in the original. I don't know. It is an '80s system over there. So that's a lot of fun. And Robbie Damon, he's coming to MomoCon here in Atlanta. They just announced him and Ray Chase. I'm sure Max Middleman, who's also part of their little improv troupe, will be next after that. But and I had never heard Axel F that way. I had that SID file, but I only heard the left channel I had never heard the right channel that had the drums and stuff in that as a kid. There's also a version of Johnny B. Goode, which is which I've only heard the three voice version, and then I didn't hear the six voice version until this past week. Coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California, and other places, I believe, like New York and in Indiana. Orange Lounge Radio 2DX. Talk about games and other things in pop culture much longer than I do. OLR, are you there?
Hi.
How are you doing?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Well.
I'm just going to say good.
Okay.
I'm well.
All right. Doing well. Yeah. So you're going to be talking about a lot of things that aren't Commodore 64 related. So I took up all the Commodore 64 time out of the room. You also collect a lot of you have a lot of the original hardware of things and stuff.
Dear Lord, yes.
And I do too. What is for people who probably can't get their hands on a lot of that stuff, and considering like this is what the Commodore 64 Ultimate is an FPGA recreation. So it's not software emulation, it's hardware emulation. What is your thought on this to keep kind of the brand alive? Would you like to see other things get kind of quote unquote official support like this, maybe other old computers like an Amiga or something like that?
Heck yeah. Where's my Coleco Adam?
There you go.
But I'm kind of reminded of Polaroid.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happened with Polaroid, right?
I know the little bit, but like explain it.
So Polaroid went out of business, and you could not buy Polaroid cameras new anymore. You couldn't buy the film anymore, which for a lot of enthusiasts like myself, mm-hmm. it was a big blow to a hobby, an entire hobbyist group. So there was a group that was called The Impossible Project, and they recreated Polaroid film and started selling it so those of us who had the cameras could take pictures, and they started refurbishing cameras as well, and eventually they bought Polaroid. Mm-hmm. And now anything Polaroid that you get is because of The Impossible Project. That's why mm-hmm. you can get the film that lets the invention of the iType camera that has mm-hmm. the battery built into the camera and not into the film. So I see this as essentially the same thing, yeah. just with video game hardware,
yeah,
a computer, really,
yeah. And that actually does sound like a lot of the same thing, because this was started by, there's a YouTuber, and I'm terrible, I should know his name, but I don't, but he bought the Commodore brand, and he's based in the UK, and actually like one of the shipping distribution places they did was literally the old Commodore office. Like the original place. And so they used it as a distribution center. And he showed like video of like from the 80s of like stuff at that office. And he's like, and here we are. That wall is still there. The ceiling still looks the same. And this is where we're shipping out Commodore 64s. So, yeah, a lot of care has come into this. And, I hope that this is a model maybe to get somebody to get the Coleco Adams. I don't know if Coleco is mm-hmm. still who Coleco's owned by or anything, but getting things like this that use FPGA, so original stuff works, but also the nice new HDMI and USB and the convenience features.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I look at this as for the fans, by the fans.
Yeah. So
and those are my favorite things. Those are my favorite projects, when the people who are invested in it aren't mm-hmm. just invested in it to use the nostalgia. It is because of their own nostalgia. They're not trying to profit off of a fandom. They are a part of the fandom.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they did a very, very good job with this. Like the user's guide that they give is extremely thick. It's actually thicker than the original. They give it's got all the hardware stuff of both the original, the original Commodore 64. So all the registers and everything that you would know from then, but also like how to use the Wi-Fi modem and things like that in here. So like I said, I was very impressed with it. If all people want to do though is play games, get something else.
Okay.
But if all you want to do is play games, get something else. This is going to be overkill, especially at the price. You can get a C64 Mini for much cheaper, and it'll play all those games. But if you really want to have like the original, like something that feels very close to the original. And even if you don't want the blinky lights, it's $50 cheaper. You just get the beige version. You don't have the blinky lights on it. I cannot recommend this enough for those like that. So Commodore.net, unfortunately, no referral code. So it's not going to be cheaper. I'm not going to get a kickback, but I love this thing.
Well, and on top of that, you have original hardware. So this is a practical.
Yeah.
A practical edition.
And going.
I didn't own one.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
A lot of people I knew, like, I was the one that had the Commodore 64, because I even found, like, on some of my discs, like, stuff that my friends had written mm-hmm. on there, and or things I had written for my babysitters. I found several of those programs where I would write a program
Don't
for my babysitter.
Score.
Yeah, and stuff. So a lot of my programs sucked. Like, they were basically, like, question-answer things. Mm. One that I found that I did when I was really young was... What is the name of this color? And I changed the border to a color, and they had to type in the right color. And like that was, but I was But I was six, so you know, misspellings abroad.
As a 6-year-old?
Yeah. So
yeah, I mean that's how you get into the programming.
Yeah.
So education, man.
Yeah. So but getting to find all those, which. Granted, if I had a working Commodore 64, I would have found all these sooner because everything else I had. But I just didn't mm-hmm. have a working Commodore 64. And now I've got one that's currently supported. And there's even warranty. And I can arm, like, people have, unfortunately, with every piece of hardware, a small percentage are going to fail. And they're going to be dead on arrival. And there's an RMA process. So if this didn't work on day one... I would have been able, there was a whole RMA process and it would have gotten replaced. And that's not something you can get with a Commodore 64 you buy off eBay, you know?
Exactly.
So
exactly. There's an important question I have for you.
Okay.
When you had everything set up and you started playing with it, how was that first emotion?
It was like coming home.
That's an indescribable brand of joy, I think, when you get to relive something as it was when it was new, but it's new, I guess, right?
Yeah, it was like coming home and relief that relief or shock. Oh my God, it still worked. Because like that monitor I've used on and off for like 40 years. It was my TV in the dorm and stuff like that. So I knew the monitor still worked. It was the disk drive that I had no clue if it was going to still work. And it was really the first, when I put in the first disk and listed the directory and it actually listed the directory. That
nice.
Was, and like this disk had not been in the disk drive in 40 years, 40 Jeez. Years. And it still worked. And
things
what
are built to last.
Yeah. And so what I did is I would put a disk in. And there is, on the Commodore 64 Ultimate, in the main menu, there is a, you can dig into the settings and go to a thing called Ultacopy. And what it'll do is it'll read from your disk and make a D64 on your USB drive. And so I was basically just ripping disks. And
archiving.
And then I was loading the USB version of the disk and then going in and finding the programs and stuff. But now they're on a USB disk and I don't need to put those disks in the drive, but I was able to get them in once. And so that's been most of the
time.
Some of
those disks might be a little fragile too.
Yeah.
So this is preservation.
Yeah. Yeah. And a good number of my disks that I was like, okay, Ultacopy will stop, which means it hit a bad sector. And so I can't copy more. So there's other things I could possibly do to like just copy like the files it can see, but it's not that one. It's been a big nostalgia trip for me, and it's been absolutely worth the $300-something that I paid for it.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Like not to say that as I'm happy for you, but like I really am happy for you. That's an emotion right there that you could buy.
Yeah, money bought that damn happiness.
Exactly. And you know what? I'm here for it.
this is the sound of happiness right there. That little cha-ching. I know y'all actually are going to talk about things that have been happening this week. What are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio 2DX tonight?
Oh, we're going to talk about the government shenanigans mm-hmm. for a little bit, just since it's, you know, big news. Yeah. But we have a little bit about a game that's now made available to release. Mm. Some Dead by Daylight stuff, because, of course, I'm going to talk about Dead by Daylight.
Yep.
The new Castlevania. Okay. And a little bit about Nintendo's Indie World Showcase. And this is Ranma's week for our classic something. Ooh. So want to guess what it is? Too bad.
Too bad. I'm going to wait. Orange Lounge Radio 2DX is up next. Thanks so much, Sammy.
Anytime.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. The Commodore 64 Ultimate will not be sitting next to me. It will be down in the basement with the rest of the setup, and I will actually talk about modern stuff for once, I guess. But thank you so much for listening to me talk about the Commodore 64 Ultimate. I spent a lot of time talking about it playing with it this week, and all I wanted to do was talk about it, and y'all are my friends. So, yes, I will be back next Sunday night. You can also find me on the Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. You can find me on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com, Instagram at BobbyBlackWolf, and you can also submit feedback over on our Discord server and stuff that you want me to talk about next week. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. You being here is really all we ask, but those of you who do have bits and subscriptions, thank you so much. That does help us just stay legal here. So thank you so much, Dark Soccer, resubscribed. SSJ, Winner and Mad, resubscribed. Saying Twitch Maths, I think it was the 75th time, but it's been more than 75 months. Dark Tetsuya resubscribed, saying 62 in a row, hey, plus 47 months of weird Twitch math. And Rin Marie resubscribed. They said, finally, we can listen live again. Welcome back, Rin Marie. Thank you so much for being here. And I will hit the button that says I can leave the stream. Where is it? It's over here somewhere. There it is. Not Commodore 64 music. This was made to sound like an NES, not a Commodore 64. But anyway, I will see you next week. Take care of yourself. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.